Hello, my Walking with Jesus friends. I wonder what these words mean to you. Integrity, faithful, honorable, trustworthy. You can probably think of similar words that you could add to this list, can't you? These words describe the type of family and friends you'd like, and employees, and politicians, and pastors, right? In recent days, as I've listened to various voices describing what's happening in our world, I find myself wondering who I can really trust. What about you? That is one reason why our reputation is so important, isn't it, my friends? As you know, we each build our reputation every day, and either what we do and say confirms and validates the reputation we have been building, or it undermines or contradicts our reputation. Have you noticed how quickly a few bad decisions, a few unwise comments can undo years, even a lifetime, of honorable reputation? In our journey with Mr. Nehemiah, we've come to the final chapter of his report. I believe him to be an honorable, reliable man, and I trust his report to be accurate. This 13th chapter shows us, once again, that even people with good intentions and strong guidelines can drift from their commitments. Evidently, after several years in Jerusalem, leading the wall rebuild project, positioning leadership, establishing security protocols, and even a glorious dedication of the wall ceremony, evidently the time came for Mr. Nehemiah to return to the city of Susa and King Artaxerxes who had sent him. In fact, look at chapter 13, verse 6. But while all this was going on, I was not in Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, I had returned to the king. 12 years is a long time, isn't it? It was in the 20th year of Artaxerxes' reign, while Nehemiah was doing his normal cupbearer work in the palace in Susa, that Nehemiah first heard a report from his brother Hanani that the city of Jerusalem needed help. Specifically, Jerusalem needed someone with ability to analyze and solve really big problems, the ability to cast a vision for an outrageous but necessary and achievable project, the ability to mobilize many people into coordinated action, the ability to stand firm in the face of opposition, and maybe most important of all, a person who had a very close relationship with God, a strong prayer life, the ability to discern how God was speaking, and the ability to help people follow God's lead. Do you know anyone like that? That's a tall order, isn't it? And oh, did I mention integrity and trustworthy and honorable and reliable? After being shaken by his brother's report, Nehemiah did the best thing he could do. He privately, earnestly went to God in prayer and even fasting, not for a few moments, but for hours each day for 4 months. And in that time, God shaped in Nehemiah a deep passion, a heavy burden, and a clear vision for what God wanted to accomplish in Jerusalem. Even though Nehemiah was not a builder, not an architect, had never worked on a construction project as far as we know, as he prayed over the report of Hanani and learned that the city wall of Jerusalem had laid in rubble for 140 years and thus the city was vulnerable to attack, God did in Nehemiah's heart what he had done in Moses' heart. When Moses went up Mount Sinai to meet with God for 40 days, God described to Moses something no one had ever seen, a tent of meeting, an Ark of the Covenant, golden lampstands, the altar of incense, and much more. As Moses described it to Mr. Bezalel and Aholiab, craftsmen anointed by the Holy Spirit of God, they understood and led other craftsmen and talented women in the fabrication of all these sacred things, which were used by generations of Hebrews in their worship of Holy God. We find that remarkable construction project in Exodus chapter 25 through 39. Nearly 400 years later, King David had the same experience, and in 1 Chronicles 28:11-21, the record says, King David gave his son Solomon the plans for the temple, of all that the Spirit had put in his mind. All of this, David said, I have in writing as a result of the Lord's hand upon me, and God enabled me to understand all the details of the plan. Now ponder that a moment, friends. The tent of meeting in the desert and the great temple in Jerusalem, designed by God himself, the greatest architect of all time, and communicated to Moses and David, neither of whom were architects or builders, and they in turn passed the instructions to those who did the actual construction. The same thing happened with Nehemiah as he led a multitude of normal citizens in the miraculous rebuild of that Jerusalem wall in only 52 days. Now, friends, if you and I had the character and the courage, the relationship with God, and the willingness to let God lead us to do things far beyond our training, our talents, our skills, what might God have in mind that He would like to accomplish in 2021 in your part of the world through you and me? Here's something important to consider. Moses, David, and Nehemiah were not perfect men, but each was led by God to lead others in accomplishing amazing things which left a lasting impact on generations of people. So what was it about these men and others like them which qualified them to partner with God in these miraculous projects down through history? I believe it was at least these four things. Their strong belief that God can do anything, anywhere, anytime that He chooses, and nothing can stop God. Second, the relationship they each developed with God over time. They were humble men, doing mundane things when God engaged them in visions of great things God wanted to accomplish in their generations. In each case, the project impacted many people in their day and for generations to come. In each case, it required that they maintain and even nurture their vibrant relationship with God so they could hear God and discern the guidance He was giving them and then explain it to others so they could catch the vision and join with them in accomplishing these great projects. Third, in each case, they faced great opposition. So it required their deep confidence in God's ability to protect them, provide all they would need, and guide them every step of the way. And fourth, in each case, these great projects needed people, lots of people who would join these courageous men in their God-given project. The faith of the people needed to be far more in God than it was in Moses, David, or Nehemiah. In fact, through these huge projects, people came to know God like they'd never known Him before. May I ask, have you ever been involved in such a God-given, God-accomplished project? How did it affect you at the time? And what difference has it made in your life since that time? We have no record, but I've often wondered what it was like when Mr. Nehemiah walked back into King Artaxerxes' palace 12 years after the king had commissioned him to go to Jerusalem to build a wall. I would guess he had aged a lot. His hands were likely rough. He'd worked hard. But his heart was likely full to overflowing, for Nehemiah had, I'm sure, experienced the presence of God with him in his long journeys of about 1,000 miles each way from Susa to Jerusalem and back. And then God's powerful daily presence was almost palpable during those 12 years of leading all that Nehemiah had accomplished in Jerusalem. The city was very different after 12 years of God and Nehemiah working together among those people. So I have a question. How different is your city, your neighborhood, simply because you have lived there for a while? Has God's powerful presence been palpable for you? Have other people noticed? If you are a parent or have ever had any leadership role, then you understand the disappointment of those you are leading making choices contrary to how you've taught them, right? As you read Nehemiah 13, you'll see that's what happened. Despite Nehemiah's best efforts, the hearts of many, including some he had left in leadership roles, turned away as he returned to Susa. Why is a great question, and Nehemiah's report doesn't explain the why. But I suspect we know the answer, my friends, because we've all dealt with it in our own kids or those we've tried to lead, and if we're honest, deep down in our own hearts too. It's selfishness, it's greed, it's rebellion, it's compromise, it's peer pressure, it's, well, you know, we've all faced it. I've often wondered why Nehemiah asked the king for a second chance to go back to Jerusalem a second time. The record says, sometime later, I asked the king permission and I returned to Jerusalem. Here I learned about the evil thing Eliashib had done in providing Tobiah a room in the courts of the house of God. I was greatly displeased. Oh my, and if you'll keep reading, you'll see quite a description of, well, I'll call it hearty discipline. Do you recognize those two names, Eliashib and Tobiah? You'll find Mr. Eliashib in Nehemiah chapter 3, verse 1, as they began construction of the wall. Do you see? He was the high priest in Jerusalem. And you'll find Tobiah in Nehemiah 2:10, 19, chapter 4, verse 3, chapter 6, verse 1, 12, 14, 17, etc. It's amazing, isn't it? Tobiah was one of the ringleaders of those in opposition to Nehemiah. You may recall Sanballat was another of those who led the opposition. And you won't believe what you'll find in chapter 13, verse 28 about Sanballat. In closing today, my friends, I invite you to read through Nehemiah's final chapter carefully, taking note of the various ways the people had turned away from his instructions and from God in only a few years. What will it require, my friends, for you and me and our families to be those people of God, honoring integrity, faithfulness, and trustworthiness, not just this year, but for years to come and even generations? As you read this last chapter, ask God to show you how you can lead your family to avoid this spiritual and moral drift. And one last question. Do you see Nehemiah's closing statement of his record? Remember me with favor, my God. How will you be remembered when your earthly journey is completed? Now here's a song to help you consider that question in chapter 13 of Nehemiah.